WSW Nation, welcome to another edition of the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Podblast series. I am Greg Phillips of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and with me is my Canadian brethren here, Aaron George. Aaron, how are you?
I am wonderful. Are we doing the Hard Traveling Fanboys tonight?
You know, I think we're kind of filling in.
Because every time I listen to it, I just want to read more comics, so...
Well, that's the goal.
I know.
That's the ultimate goal of our side of the Place to Be Nation family, is to try to get more people reading comics, and most importantly, to get them all to agree with us.
Yes.
So, in the spirit of everybody agreeing with everything, let's move on to our topic for today, and we're going to be talking about one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
Woo!
Now, the Nature Boy has had two distinct WWE runs. So when we're looking at him and analyzing him for our lists, we're going to be looking at the entirety of his WWE career, encompassing 1991, 1992, and 2002 through 2008. And of course, anyone who's listened to our Greatest Wrestler Ever Podblast series knows that we are using the NJPW system, not New Japan Pro Wrestling. No, this stands for four categories: nuance, jump up factor, promo skills and character work, and finally, work rate. So, Aaron, let's jump right in. Ric Flair, your thoughts on his WWE career?
Well, I mean, there's lots to unpack here. But
let's start with nuance. The first category here is nuance, which encompasses longevity, flexibility, and intangibles. What do you make of the Nature Boy in these categories?
He doesn't have the longevity. Like, I mean, his first run is only about a year and a half. I would say he's got some interesting flexibility. He worked really well as his usual Nature Boy character when he was there in 92, 93. I thought he did well in the tag team with Batista in terms of being able to work as a competent tag worker. But there was also something about him morphing into... better or worse at this point, because I don't want to get on the praise too quickly. But there was quite a difference in character between his early Nature Boy characters and his older, dirtiest player in the game characters, where he'd just grab your nuts and hold on to them and stuff. Like, there was a very different amount of a very different character at work there. So I think he's got to get some points in flexibility for that.
He became somewhat of his weird character that he developed into, even as a babyface in the 2000s, was kind of like the Picasso of nutshots. where, you know, like one minute it might be an uppercut, the next minute he might just grab them and twist. It might be the old trick knee. You never know what was coming. So that's a good point, and it's one that I don't think that I give him enough credit for, because I am as high can get on his 91 through 93 run. I love his WWF run, but I'm about as low as it gets on his comeback run, and I think that's colored a little bit of my perception on how good he was at times during that run.
Well, let me ask you something about that. Do you think you do that because you're comparing him to how he was, or you're comparing him to the other people he was surrounded with later on?
I think it's probably a combination of the two, because I grew up in NWA country, WCW country, so I saw Ric Flair as the man, and it was kind of hard for me to watch him struggling to do the corner flip in matches and things like that. Be the old man, and I think he was all. And to his credit, I didn't think that he would be able to pull off being a heel when he came back in the 2000s, because everybody loved him so much. And I thought he really did do a good job when he was managing Triple H and teaming with Batista, of being such a smarmy ass kisser that you couldn't really root for him. And I think, you know, to your credit, he did play both babyface and heel roles. He did work as a tag wrestler, and he did have a phenomenal singles run in the 90s, and then had a few bits here and there. What about the intangibles? Obviously, Ric Flair carries with him this innate star power. Even when he was at the end of his career, he was still Ric Flair.
Yeah, and he also has the ability to elicit a certain emotional reaction from you that a lot of guys don't. I would say the best wrestler at that is probably Randy Savage, in terms of you watch him and you're like, oh my God, I'm invested in everything he does. But there's something about Ric Flair that that connects you to him. You're happy for him when he, like, he wins the Intercontinental title from Carlito, and you're happy for him. Like, not only the character, but the person. Like, and I think that there's very few guys that have that, and that matters.
It does, and to your point, it's easy, and I make jokes about Ric Flair crying all the time.
Yeah.
Every day. But I'm not going to lie, when I watched Ric Flair get emotional in his retirement match, or when I watched him get emotional in a promo with Triple H in 2003 of all things, I got a little emotional because he is so good at bringing that out. I think that's the one thing about Ric Flair that never went away. I think as we saw his skills erode, and we saw maybe his presentation erode a little bit over the years, I don't think he ever lost that ability to, as you put it, make us care about what he was doing.
No, and like no one screams fuck you when they're in a figure four except Ric Flair. Like he is just in the moment every moment, and that's something that should be taught to some of the newer guys.
Yeah, he is Ric Flair at all times.
Yeah,
and that's something that comes from his generation of wrestlers, is that he is, as Randy Savage was, he is always the Nature Boy, and to his detriment in real life.
Yeah, he's always the Nature Boy.
on screen, he is always the Nature Boy. And that, let's get down to Jump Up Factor, because here is probably his strongest category, I would say. Along the J and the P are probably his strongest categories, because when you look at his memorable peak matches, and to leave out moments and storylines, you've got the Macho Man feud in 92, which had the great match at WrestleMania 8.
Yeah.
You have the great series of matches with Savage, the 92 Royal Rumble, which I think is still the standard bearer for how a great Battle Royal should be booked. And his performance in that is the best individual performance in a Royal Rumble of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, no other Iron Man in a Royal Rumble is as active. Like, no, Rey Mysterio absolutely beat the record, but he was laying around for a good 30 minutes of it. Ric Flair fought everyone.
Yep. And the entire story of the match, in fact, seemed to be how many guys hated Ric Flair's character.
Yeah.
Barbarian doesn't like Flair. You know? It was just such a great run there. He had matches with Brett that were really good. He had matches with Shawn, or a match with Shawn that was really good, and even concluded it with one of the best early Raw matches against Mr. Perfect.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, there's no doubt about that. But then even on his comeback run, Aaron, I thought he had some really strong matches. Going back to WrestleMania 18 with The Undertaker, which to me was the second best match of that show. Or at least the second most memorable, maybe in the best match, depending on the mood that you're in.
Yeah.
Against Taker, and also had some really good ones later on with Shawn and Triple H as well, and even Randy Orton. I think they had a cage match that was really good. So
I would ask anybody who's thinking about Ric Flair in terms of that period to go back and watch the cage match from Taboo Tuesday against Triple H. It's a brutal, bloody brawl. But there's just so much intensity to it, and it works. And I would also go back and watch at Survivor Series that year, the Last Man Standing. And I hate Last Man Standing matches. The gimmick just doesn't work for me. But it's fantastic. Like, it's just two fantastic matches. And when you think about this guy's, like, what, pushing 60 at this point, and against Triple H, who I loathe, like, it really is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, and when you think about the moments and the storylines, the Macho Man, She Was Mine Before She Was Yours, was a classic story. His feud with Hogan, I thought, was really, even though it didn't go anywhere, it was really fun at the time.
Thunder
he had
Lips.
Great stuff with Piper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that whole first sequence where McMahon got hit by the chair, and like no one did that stuff at that point. He brought a chaos with him that didn't exist before.
Absolutely. I think his return to Raw was a very memorable moment, even though it came during one of my least favorite Raw episodes of all time, the reboot episode in 2001. He had moments along the way, not as many with Evolution. But then, of course, he concludes it with that tremendous retirement ceremony. Who's ever going to forget that? So he certainly fills the check marks here in moments, storylines, and matches.
Yeah, I would even, I mean, I maybe you mentioned it, but even that retirement match, like, he's not as good in it as he usually is, but that's part of the story of the match. So it just enhances what's going on.
Yeah, it was one of those deals where, like, it was hard for me as a longtime fan to watch Rick struggling to hit his old spots, to do the flip, to do the, you know, the complex sequences. When I think there's a spot in that match where they try to bridge and he can't do it, and Sean kind of gets it out of him the next time they try it. But he still rose to the occasion. You know, I was there at that WrestleMania at 24, and there was this sense in the building that almost a communal sense that we were Ric Flair in that match, that we were willing him to find his old self again. And I thought he did as much as he could at that point. And, you know, I think that a lot of his mid-card matches in that 2003 through 2006 era were not especially good. When I think back to, you know, him beating the Hurricane needlessly on Raw a few times in 03, and, you know, having some forgettable matches with Kenny Dykstra, for instance.
Yeah.
But it's hard to put that on Flair, ultimately, because he was working with a lot of guys that weren't really seasoned guys.
No, and I would say that, like, even though his matches weren't what they were, like, for the most part, I didn't find them bad or poor. Like, they were... You'd probably have them between, like, 2.5 and 3 stars, for me, anyway. Like, they're just kind of there, you know? Which, in the end, I mean, it's not what you want out of Ric Flair, but, like, he's better than a lot of the guys still working in that era. Like, he's better than, like, a Chris Masters or a Carlito or, like...
Or Kenny Dykstra.
Yeah, or all the idiots you just mentioned, you know? He's, like... Like, you know, like, you look at a guy like Dolph Ziggler, who... you can't really compare, he's never fought, but, like... Very few of his matches have any rhyme or reason to them. You know, even Ric Flair in that era, his matches still made sense. And I think he does get a little unfairly docked for how good he was versus how good he was in that moment. You get what I'm saying? Like,
Even though it's like Jordan with the Wizards.
Yes.
He was still pretty good.
Exactly.
Yeah, and let's move on to the P category, promo skills and character work.
Wow.
This is probably, to me, where he maybe slipped the most in the comeback run, but I think he was still good. But when he was at his peak, Flair is obviously a top 3-4 type promo guy ever in wrestling.
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, how can anyone watch the promo after the Royal Rumble?
Put that cigarette out.
My God Almighty, so freaking good!
Yeah.
And then of course the post WrestleMania 8 promo with the blood pouring down his face.
I'm glad you brought that up. And, when he's talking about regrouping. We're gonna just regroup and get this back. And
mm-hmm. You did it once.
Yeah.
Now do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so good. So when later on it became like, you are the champ. You are the greatest. Like that was his entire character for like 3 years.
Yeah, the whole character was to kiss Triple H's ass. It was like, you know, it was like, listen, I'm telling you right now, I've seen a lot of champions, and Hunter, you're the best.
You're the best.
Even to the point where I don't want to include his more recent work because he's not an active competitor anymore. But when they brought him back for the Shield segment with Evolution, and the whole point was for him to put over Evolution, or put over the Shield, rather. And instead, he says, listen, all of you are good, but I'm telling you right now, you're not as good as Randy.
Hunter. That's right. He doesn't put over his daughter as much as he put over Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Yeah, it's like, and his promos, I thought he would find the magic occasionally. I was at a Raw in 2003 when he came face-to-face with Triple H, and they teased that he was going to turn on Triple H, if you remember, because Hunter kind of – it set up this big world title match between Triple H and Ric Flair, where Flair just had to know. He had to know if he could hang.
Yeah.
And he could find that magic once in a while.
I would say, too, that, like, as much as his promo suffered, I find his character legitimately funny to watch in 2003. Like, if you watch him as a manager in the Elimination Chamber – at the SummerSlam, apparently on Bret Hart. There's a moment where he's holding the door with his feet. He's leaning on the ramp and holding the door with his feet. I think it might be who's he holding? It might be Goldberg. I'm not sure. But he's just so pleased. He's so pleased with the fact that he's doing that, and he's also giving the person the finger, like, as he's doing it. And I think it's just a nice little character window.
And think back to watch WrestleMania 19, the Booker T and Triple H match, which is often maligned. Watch Ric Flair during that match, and he causes Jim Ross to have a coronary on commentary due to his constant interference. But Flair is like a man possessed during that match. He's so upset at the referee. He's so upset about any time Triple H is at a disadvantage. He's finding ways to cheat. He's really good in that role, and I enjoyed him in that role, and I thought it was a fun thing to see. But ultimately, it's when I think back to the promo skills and the character work, he was still playing the same character, but I guess I didn't enjoy the transition into sycophant Ric Flair versus, you know, the guy who was the respected, you would think would be the respected veteran. And then finally, we've got work rate, and this is kind of an interesting category, Aaron, and I feel like it's almost a can of worms in the internet wrestling community of how you view Ric Flair as a worker. Amazing worker, hard worker, and all the matches, you can't say enough about him. But what do you think, Aaron? Is there something to the rather formulaic approach? Now, granted, everyone's got a formula, but what do you think of the Ric Flair formula, particularly as it turns into his comeback run?
You mean his comeback run in the 2000s you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Because here's what I would say. I would say that in his first run, I don't think his formula actually really existed as it did in the NWA. Like, I just don't think he had enough opportunity at the big stage to really fall into that pattern and keep doing the same thing. His matches were all so different. Like, he's in a Survivor Series match in Royal Rumble. He's in the match with Savage, which is different than everything. His matches with Savage were different. So I think in a way that helps him. Like, he looks like he has a bunch of different kind of matches. When he did come back, you're absolutely right. It was chop, 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 figure four, go up to the top rope, get slammed. It was the same thing every time. And I think the Ric Flair story of work rate is really a tale of two cities. Like, you can't touch him in 91, 92, 93. He's great, and he's the Ric Flair everybody knows. When he comes back, he's okay, but there's definitely something missing, and he's relying far too heavily on being Ric Flair.
Right, and I think that's one of the things when you just look at his work and you see that, you know, it's so many nut shots and it's the flip that he half the time he didn't hit in the 2000s. and it was just really interesting. There's also – I really like his matches with Brett from 91 and 92. I think they're way better than either guy gives them credit for.
Yeah.
But it is kind of interesting to watch Bret Hart essentially work like Lex Luger. In terms of doing the throw off the turnbuckles, he stopped short of doing a gorilla press slam, but it's almost like I can see Rick calling that spot in the match, like, okay, give me the gorilla press, and Brett being, I don't think I can do that, but they're still good matches, and so I think for me it's hard to dock Rick too many points when the end result is great match after great match, and then when he comes back, even though he was formulaic as we mentioned, he still was having, like you put it, good matches.
Logical.
Even if they weren't great, they were solid. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the matches I do really enjoy, like those two I mentioned against Triple H, is they were fights. Like, they were just fist fights more than matches, but they were done in a believable way. So, you know, a lot of people can't pull that off, and he still could.
Yeah, there's another kind of hidden – there are a couple of hidden gym matches that Rick had during his initial run that maybe people should check out. One of them is versus El Matador, Tito Santana, which is one of those matches you wouldn't expect perhaps at that point to be as good as it was.
Was that on Superstars?
It might have been. I can't remember. I think I saw it on a Coliseum video, if I'm not mistaken. I know I've seen it at some point, and I watched it on YouTube a couple years ago, and it holds up really well. So that one was pretty good. He had there was a match with Shawn Michaels when Rocker Shawn Michaels. It's pretty fun.
Featured in WWF magazine.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I remember. I don't know why I remember it, but there was an article on Shawn Michaels getting to fight his idol or something along those lines.
Yeah, and then one of my favorite matches of that era, and this is a weird match to say this, one of my favorites, I absolutely love the tag match of Bret Hart and Randy Savage versus Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels from just after WrestleMania 8.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I got to check it out.
You got to check it out, man. It is so much fun. It's just like, it's like 20 minutes or something, 25 minutes maybe, and it is just a blast to watch. Just four of the best ever just throwing their balls to the wall, all action kind of match.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to check that out.
And with that being said, do you have any final thoughts on Nate that you'd like to leave the listeners with?
I mean, I'd like a little more give him a chance on that second run. Because he's not the Ric Flair you knew, but there's something there, and there's something special there. Like, it's not as good, but there's something going on there. Like, as for me, like, does he make your list, Greg?
Yes, he's definitely on my list, and he's probably, I'm going to go ahead and say he's definitely top 50 for me, because I think his peak run, even disqualifying, because I'm going to revisit some of the matches you mentioned and try to give them a fair shake again, because I was colored by my own perceptions at the time of that run that I wasn't, you know, I was very much against the Triple H Reign of Terror and yes. all that stuff, and so it really colored my perception of Rick and his sycophant character, but I'm going to give that a chance again. But even without that, I think his peak run, to me, even if your later stuff is bad, if your peak run is as good as Flair's was, anything else is just icing on the cake. And to me, his 92 alone earns him a spot on the list. Top 50, I think, is fair for me. And where he goes from there, I just have to see how he lines up against some of the other competition. What about you?
Yeah, it's about the same. Like, I would be a little bit higher, probably top 40. But again, through scrutiny, people might move in and out. But it's just that. It's just what you said. Like, even to me, like, for your lows to hurt you, they need to be real lows. Like, not to get off on a tangent, but a guy like Undertaker has real lows. Like, Ric Flair doesn't have anything as bad as Undertaker versus Undertaker. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, nothing yeah. in the Federation has anything as bad as that, almost. But, yeah. but so his lows are mediocre and maybe some poor, you know? So I don't see it hurting him that much. So I think top 40. That seems to make sense to me.
Awesome. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to let us know what you think about Ric Flair and where he should fall on these lists. We hope that you look at some of the stuff we mentioned, some of the matches, some of the moments, and give Ric Flair some consideration for your lists. You can follow along with the project at placetobenation.com. We've got a great Podblast series going, as well as some full-length podcasts talking about it. And we always invite your feedback, so let us know. And if you want to reach out to us on social media, I am on Twitter at gphillips8652. How can they find you, Aaron?
I am at Aaron D. George, and I am on it very infrequently, but hey, you never know.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, folks, and be sure to join us for the next Podblast.
Woo!